Welcome, everyone. I am Bob Wurzelbacher, the director of the Respect Life Office for the Archdiocese of Cincinnati, and this is our video podcast series that we call Being Pro-Life. This is the final episode in our special series on Issue 1, a ballot initiative in the state of Ohio to enshrine a right to abortion into Ohio's Constitution. Now that the election is over, we're closing the series with the same guest we opened with last March, Peter Range, Executive Director of Ohio Right to Life. Peter, welcome back to the show.
Bob, it's great to see you. I wish we were talking under different circumstances, but we are where we are, and I'm happy to talk to you about how we move forward in the days and weeks and months to come.
Thanks, Peter. Well, as you know, Issue 1, the right to reproductive freedom, passed in the state of Ohio last November, about 57 to 43%. I know that you and countless people of faith worked very hard across the state of Ohio to defeat this initiative. And on that count, at least, we were not successful. What are your thoughts on these efforts and in this defeat here with Issue 1?
Yeah, well, thanks so much again, Bob, to have this conversation. It's important that we as a pro-life community kind of come together and just digest this. It's good to kind of talk about it and walk through our emotions as well. I've likened it almost to a death in the family in the sense of, you know, just how impactful this loss is for us and the fact that abortion is now allowed, or it's going to be allowed when this amendment takes place, through all 9 months of pregnancy. And so this isn't just losing an election, right? This is human lives that will not be here because we were unsuccessful in this election. So it's heartbreaking and it's challenging. It's still hard to process the emotions of a loss like this. But we have to continue to fight. We have no other option as Catholics and as Christians to get back up again and continue the fight. And so that's where I want to begin. There was a general, Nathaniel Greene, in the Revolutionary War. He was actually charged by George Washington to go distract the British troops in South Carolina. And what he did was he split up his troops and he continued just to pester the British. Now, each battle he was engaged in, he would end up losing. But because he kept fighting, he extended the British supply line so much that the British ran out of supplies. They ran out of the ability to fight. And as Nathaniel Greene was doing that, George Washington won at Yorktown, which won the Revolutionary War. So Greene's role in this was just so incredibly important. But he has a quote and he said, look, we rise, we fight, we get beat, but we rise again tomorrow and we fight again. And so that has to be our attitude that, yeah, we're going to get beat sometimes in these fights, but we just have to continue fighting. So when I look at this election, just a few reflections on it, which I think are important for our listeners to think about. One is to think their pro-life representatives, if they are out there speaking the truth in love. Bob, it was disheartening to me, quite frankly, to talk to some representatives who may be endorsed by pro-life organizations, including my own or others, but then it used their entire platform to kind of go out and fight for Issue 1. They thought that maybe it wasn't a winning battle, whatever it may be. So that was heartbreaking for me to be a part of. But there were so many of our pro-life representatives that did. And so we need to thank them, whether that's, you know, Senator J.D. Vance or Governor DeWine, who used his platform to raise funds for the campaign, all those things. I mean, that's a tremendous blessing for us that we have pro-life representatives that really want to fight for the campaign. But when you look at, you know, their message versus ours, we have to just take stock that kind of bodily autonomy message of my body, my choice, that's a really strong message that the other side has. So we need to continue to work on pro-life apologetics to how to address that and to remind individuals that we're speaking to as well that there's two bodies involved in the abortion decision, not only the woman's body, which we respect in her bodily autonomy, but we also respect the baby's bodily autonomy as well. But at the end of the day as well, when you look at the way that they ran their campaign, they spent the last 2 weeks with about $8 million on kind of one topic, and that was the topic of sexual assault or rape. And they ran three commercials that were very emotionally laden and driven that impacted a lot of folks, even here in my hometown. And I live in a pretty conservative place here in Northwest Ohio. But when I knocked on people's doors to talk to them about what they were seeing on TV and how they were thinking about voting on Issue 1, that situation about, you know, a 10-year-old who had been sexually assaulted and so on and so forth, that came up a lot. And a lot of that was because they were spending so much money on that. So that kind of visceral emotional message was very successful for them towards the end of the campaign. But I want people to realize too, you know, when you look at the numbers here in the state of Ohio, I think they might find it interesting that, you know, we won 63 counties here in the state. They won 25. A third of their votes came from, you know, the three larger counties here in the state of Ohio, Cuyahoga, Franklin, and Hamilton. So a lot of the state is still very pro-life. It just, there wasn't enough of us living kind of in those 63 counties that we did end up winning. But again, when you look at the electorate, you had over half the people that were registered to vote didn't even vote in this election. So, you know, I want to be just jumping to this thought that the entire state is pro-choice. I think our greater battle, quite frankly, might be many of the state is apathetic towards this issue. And we need to awaken them to the reality of kind of what's in danger here. But another area for us to really focus on, when you look at the demographic breakdown of this particular amendment, you look at, for example, the age breakdown. We lost 18 to 29 year olds, 82% to 18%. We lost 30 to 44 year olds, 69% to 31%. And also, looking demographically as well, while African Americans only make about 10% of our population here in the state of Ohio, we lost them roughly around 84% that went for issue one. So we have a lot of work to do in particular communities, African American communities, with our youth as well, and also just our evangelical communities also. I mean, when you look at born again Christians or those who identified as evangelical or born again, they went for President Trump, for example, in 2020 at a 65% level. They voted against this amendment, 52% here in the state of Ohio. So we lost evangelical voters who went for President Trump by 13%. We lost them, again, by 13% here. So those are just some numbers to think about for us moving forward. And again, I don't think this necessarily necessitates a policy change here, anything of that nature, but it's just something that it's good that our supporters and pro-life people are aware of. So we know how to kind of address and talk about these issues. But as I mentioned, the other side, they closed their campaign on kind of the rape and incest question. And when you look at our heartbeat bill that we passed in the state of Ohio, which does not have exceptions for rape and incest, that law here in our state has about 17% approval. And that law, when rape and incest exceptions are added, it goes over 50%. So the other side really made this in some ways a referendum on what they thought was the current bill, although the heartbeat law, of course, it's still in the courts and everything of that nature. So that's a difficult, challenging subject for even people who identify, you know, as pro-life, that we have to be willing to appreciate that played a part in this campaign. So I have other thoughts about media and money. Maybe we can get into that if you want to, but I think that's an important part of the puzzle as to, you know, what we have to face moving forward, because I think at the end of the day, and we can get to this as well, you know, we have to do our own constitutional amendment at some point. We cannot let this stand for the next 20 years here in the state of Ohio because of the cultural impact it will have if we allow this law to be a teacher about what is good, true, and beautiful.
So, Peter, thanks for all that. It's interesting. As someone who goes to the March for Life in Washington, D.C. every year, we always see so many young people, and you get this sense, right, that the young people are the future of this movement, but we lost so badly here in the state of Ohio. Where's the disconnect there, do you think? Is it not as young of a movement as we think? Is it just because they're free? That's why they come? Is it because we just lost on this messaging that focused on rape and incest and medical necessity, right? And these sorts of things. Why are we doing so poorly in the college crowd?
Yeah, so I would say a couple of things with that. I mean, first and foremost, I've led about 18 March for Life trips, and right. I've also been on many more. And I think it's a great event to go towards. But I think a lot of those trips sometimes that I've been on, whether I was a part of it or then when I began to lead it as well, we miss an opportunity to really catechize our young people. So we take it kind of as a pilgrimage or an experience, but we have a captive audience maybe for, you know, if you're traveling from Ohio, for example, for 8 hours. So I really switched my trips to be very catechetical, you know, helping them with pro-life apologetics. So not only do they have the feeling of being pro-life, but when they come back and they're challenged with some of these difficult situations, they're able to effectively articulate, well, what is the pro-life position in a situation of rape or incest or something of that nature? And that's where I think we've fallen short a little bit, is that we get our young people involved and engaged or excited, but are they really ready with those apologetics moving forward for the years to come? Because they're going to face, you know, very difficult professors in colleges and so on and so forth. You know, the other thing we can't discount is while, you know, we have a lot of students in Catholic schools, the reality is, and I've been in many Catholic schools around the state of Ohio, there are some great catechesis taking place in our schools, but I might speak to a freshman or sophomore class, for example, that 100% pro-life and the students understand it. But then I get to the juniors and seniors, and about 50% of those students are pro-life, and they're bringing up these different exceptions and stuff. So what is taking place between freshman to senior year, sometimes in our high schools? Well, one, they might have different teachers with different opinions. Two, there might be just the reality of sin or even sexual sin that's entered students' lives. And so sometimes that impacts our worldview and understanding of things as well. But three, we can't discount how much pressure there is in our popular culture today to adopt positions and views which are different than our Catholic faith. You know, if your kid is spending hours a day on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, all those different social media platforms, they're getting different messages. And I just went the other day and again, Bob, this might make me unpopular with some of your listeners, and that's okay. And I appreciate that. But, you know, I just went the other day to a baptism, and the deacon at this particular baptism was talking about, you know, getting his granddaughter ready for a Taylor Swift concert. And she was getting all dressed up just like Taylor Swift. Now, I'm not sure if you watch many Taylor Swift videos, but I have, just so I can understand what my nephews or nieces were into. She doesn't dress very modestly, nor do her videos kind of present an image which is building kind of a culture of life, a culture of respect for the human body. And so when most of our culture, even our Catholic culture, sometimes just goes along with what the general culture is singing about or is watching on television and stuff, our voting patterns won't look different than the rest of the culture either. And I think we've seen that in this election as well, where Catholics are split when it comes to this issue of abortion. So we have to be radical in the way that we live our faith, and radical in the context of making those hard decisions to tell our kids, you know, I definitely respect that if you're in sixth or seventh grade, all your friends have a cell phone. But do I think putting, as Jason Everett would say, you know, this is kind of like having a triple X theater in your pocket, if you will. Am I comfortable giving that to my kids? So we got to make sure that they have the safeguards on their phones if we believe they need to have phones, and that we're, you know, we're checking their emails. We're doing all those things that we should be doing as parents, because our kids are going to get swept up in this culture, which again is voting for abortion rights, the killing of preborn children in the womb when it comes to these general elections. And I think we lost our young people, not only because we, you know, struggle to do our job fully through Catholic education, but I mean, you look at what they're teaching in our public schools and our public universities as well. It's really antithetical to everything we believe. So that's a large cultural force that we're up against that we have to be willing to be radical to push back against to make a difference.
So Peter, as you were mentioning, there was a lot of talk about rape and incest, right? That we don't have those exceptions in the heartbeat bill. Of course, obviously, as Catholics, that makes no difference to how one was conceived. There's absolutely no difference in the value and dignity of that human life. But obviously, at the same time, a lot would argue that because it's so rare, and if you need to do that in order to pass the restrictions on abortion, some will say, well, I'll put that exception in just in order to pass something, right? Where do you stand on that? Do you think we just need to educate people better, or if that kind of a compromise has to be made in order to restrict abortion, it's okay to do that? Where do you think we should stand on that?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, as a Catholic, we believe exactly as you just said, Bob, that every life conceived, made in the image and likeness of God. And one of the videos that Ohio Right to Life did and actually shared digitally during the campaign was a story of Lauren Bunting. She had actually been sexually assaulted when she was 17. She chose life, and she has a beautiful 14-year-old daughter named Isabella now. And when you see Isabella's smile, it kind of makes sense that this life didn't deserve the death penalty. And we didn't want to add another trauma on top of already the trauma that Lauren was kind of struggling with, having been sexually assaulted. So I think the most important thing we can do in the pro-life and Catholic community is to tell stories. And one of my good friends, Ryan Bomberger, for example, runs the Radiance Foundation. His mother had been raped when she was 15, but again, chose life. Ryan ended up being adopted. And now he does tremendous work talking about the dignity and value of life. And he's actually adopted two children of his own in his own personal life as well. So I think we remind people about the dignity and value of life, even in those most extreme circumstances. And we help them realize too that this trauma of sexual assault is not healed by another trauma, which is the abortion decision as well. So, you know, we stand as an organization at Ohio Right to Life firmly behind the dignity and value of every single human life, no matter how it's conceived. But it is just something for us to be aware of when it comes to our general public. in the state of Ohio about how do we effectively move the ball forward in this pro-life issue? Because, you know, if we can save 10,000 lives, we want to take that opportunity to save 10,000 lives. And Ohio Rights Life has worked incrementally over the years on this kind of pro-life struggle. And we incrementally got the ball all the way to the heartbeat decision, where we were able to pass the heartbeat law, which was tremendous here for the state of Ohio. But because it didn't have some of those exceptions, that again was a challenge in this election with this particular constitutional referendum. And it's just something, again, to be aware of as we move forward. How do we most effectively save the most amount of lives possible as we work towards that North Star of making abortion illegal and also unthinkable for the state of Ohio?
So, Peter, what are our next steps then we have here in Ohio to perhaps limit the impact of this amendment?
Yeah, thanks so much. So I think there's kind of four cornerstones that we're focused on at Ohio Rights Life, and not ready to necessarily announce everything. But first and foremost, from a legislative perspective, I think there's a few things that we can do. One thing that the other side during this campaign, they said, look, this doesn't affect parental rights at all. So I think we can look at passing legislation that protects parental rights. And if they're true to their word that this doesn't affect parental rights, then we'll ensure that that's the case in law. And if they sue to try to attempt to stop that, that will help us build the case to say, look, they were lying this whole time. And that'll help us move towards our own constitutional amendment at some point. I think there's two things legislatively as well that we can do as a pro-life movement to kind of build a culture of life that we need to focus on as well. And, you know, those involve everything from looking at how quickly we get our statistics here in the state of Ohio on abortion numbers. I think we can get those much quicker so we can be more apt to respond to different issues that are arising. We can do more to help our pregnancy centers. And I'm talking about millions and more dollars to help our pregnancy centers help support women. And I think we have to look at ideas, you know, like making birth free, for example, here in the state of Ohio. And I know that won't necessarily land well, maybe with a lot of conservative thoughts, but if we really want to support women and take away any of those thoughts they have about considering abortion, you know, financial piece is certainly one of them. So can we move towards supporting our pregnant moms and dads in any way, shape, or form? So those are some of the things I think we can maybe look at and start talking about from a legislative perspective. But secondly, I think because of the way the amendment is written, it's going to cause different issues to come up for families and for parental rights. And so I think we'll look immediately when those different issues arise to attack this thing from a litigation perspective as well. So, you know, every time we passed a pro-life bill, what would the other side do? Well, they would take us to court. So I think we in hand can do the same to them to kind of delay any impact that the constitutional amendment could potentially have. And then I think this is all building towards eventually from our side, and it might not happen in 2024. But maybe 2-3 years down the road, where we look at bringing our own constitutional amendment to bear here at the state of Ohio. And I say it won't happen immediately only because to run a campaign like this, you do need millions of dollars. And so, you know, that's going to take time to convince and work with donors that that is a pathway forward here in the state of Ohio. And we have to find a place in our law that we can get a majority of Ohioans behind as well. So that'll be a challenge as far as looking at, you know, how far can we take an abortion ban, for example, to get the majority of the state of Ohio behind. The fourth component to this, I think, beyond legislation, litigation, our own constitutional amendment is something that we can't, or we were talking about earlier, Bob, and that's education. You know, not only in our public schools and our public universities, but our Catholic schools and our Catholic universities as well. And I don't say any of these things concerning our Catholic schools to put down anybody who works them, because I worked in the Catholic schools myself. I was a teacher for 4 years in Cleveland, and some of the most heroic, amazing people that I know are individuals who are involved in our Catholic education system. But I think if we're honest with ourselves, the Catholic education system is not producing the saints that we're called to produce. It's almost a sleeping giant to a certain extent. So I think getting all our formers, all our teachers, all our administrators on the same page when it comes to building the culture of life and recognizing the importance of getting to our young people today is just so very important for us, for the movement for years to come. You know, making sure that they're fully equipped with those apologetics, so when they do face those hard questions in college or beyond, that they're fully equipped to really answer them with a pro-life position. You know, taking advantage of the fact that you have a lot of individuals who might send their students to Catholic schools, but are we spending a lot of energy and effort evangelizing those parents as well? You know, just that spirit of evangelism is something that the Catholic Church needs to re-engage and recapture as well. That's really important for the movement. And one last thing I'll say too, you know, I know some courageous priests and deacons that did an amazing job during this campaign, but I also know some priests and deacons that didn't feel even comfortable talking about the campaign as well at different churches. I mean, I spoke to some of those individuals. So empowering our leaders as well to feel comfortable talking about these issues, And then talking about the building blocks that also make the culture of life as well is really important. And so one of the things that we need to talk about is the family and in building up the family also. So we have, for example, Bob, in the Catholic Church, really, unfortunately, a contraceptive culture where many Catholics are still using contraception, although, you know, the church has defined it as an intrinsic evil, because we're separating the sexual act, which brings together couples for the unit of purpose, but also the procreative purpose. And what that does is it makes the child seem like an intrusion rather than the gift that it is. So that affects our whole mindset when it comes to the pro-life issue as well. And that's why one of the things that the other side had included in their amendment was, look, well, you have access to contraception, even though there was no laws prohibiting that here in the state of Ohio. So that's something that we need to educate our people on as well, so we can rebuild the family and rebuild this openness to life, which will not only lead to more pro-life sons and daughters, but it's also going to lead to more vocations for the church and just a growing church as well. When you look at 100 years ago and the average family size being closer to 8 to 10 kids, and now in the Catholic Church, even we're less than 2 kids is less than as our average family size. So that's why so much of the church, when we're talking about demographics and people leaving the church and stuff, we just have to get our own house straightened out. And I think that'll help us in the pro-life movement for years to come.
So do you have perhaps more specific advice to parishioners, to people perhaps involved in the Respect Life movement, you know, on a parish level, sitting in the pews? We've recruited a lot of volunteers to be really active on issue one, right? Those same people, what should we be encouraging them to really do moving forward here?
Yeah, thanks so much for the question, because that's so incredibly important. You know, I traveled the state talking to hundreds, thousands of people about the dangers of issue one. But then when I looked up the numbers at my own hometown, which I mentioned earlier in the show, it's a pretty conservative area. My own hometown here went 254 for the amendment and 250 against. And so it was kind of a gut check for me in the spheres of influence that I've been given. Was I really attentive to what I was called to do? So I would invite people on a practical perspective, start by getting to know your neighbors, whether they're pro-choice, pro-life, conservative, liberal, whatever party they might belong to. You know, we've been planted at a certain area in the state. And so knocking on our neighbors' doors, introducing ourselves, saying hello, that builds relationship. And those, through building relationship, then will open the door to be able to have a conversation about these kind of really serious issues. So I had a relationship with one of my neighbors here next door. And so we were able to talk about issue one. By the time we were done talking about issue one, we were able to put a no on issue one out in his front yard, you know, one of those yard signs. But that only happened because I had a relationship. There was a neighbor catacorning across the street who I could tell by some other signs that she had up in other times, you know, maybe not the most conservative individual, but I didn't have a relationship there where I could actually go and talk about issue one with her. So I'd invite people, get to know the folks in your neighborhood. And then secondly, you know, the same thing, whether it's the individuals in your pew after mass, you know, us Catholics, where typically we might want to run out, you know, get home for the football game, whatever it may be. Get to know, introduce yourself to people in your pews. Those small, basic building blocks to creating community is just so very important, because we have the most impact with those individuals that we have a relationship with.
You know, Peter, that's excellent. That should be basic 101 Catholic evangelization, right? This is how we influence the world, I think, in one of the greatest ways. And that is just by getting to know the people that we are placed in front of in our lives. We generally live in a world where we don't know our neighbors anymore. I was thinking that the other day. When I was a kid, we went to the store almost exclusively once per week. If we ran out of flour in the middle of the week, my mom would send me across the street to any one of several neighbors and get a cup of flour. I cannot imagine sending my kid across the street to ask a neighbor for a cup of flour. I would get in the car and I would get another thing of flour from the store. That's what I would do, because I wouldn't feel comfortable doing that. It's just that we don't have these relationships that we ought to have, and then that helps with evangelization.
Well, right. One of the best books I think I've read was called The Master Plan of Evangelization by Robert Coleman. And he wrote in there that, you know, Jesus didn't neglect the multitudes. He certainly fed the 5,000. He did a lot of preaching, but he spent the most concerted amount of time with 12 guys. He picked 12 guys and he just poured his life out into them. And I think, again, you know, returning to our Catholic culture, can we do the same? can we really invest and disciple 12 individuals in our lives? And it starts in our home with our own kids and really being intentional with them. And again, another gut check for me was I went to spiritual direction most recently, and the priest talked to me about, you know, my upbringing of my own kids. And am I being really intentional with them in the midst of this campaign? Because quite frankly, I failed to do that a little bit. I failed to be present as much as I needed to them. And the most important role I have is really as dad to those kids, right? So returning to our own homes, building up love there, and then that love will spill out. It'll spill out into our neighborhoods. It'll spill out into the pews in church. But be really intentional about discipling others so that we can help form them when it comes to these very important issues that we end up voting on. But again, if we don't have that relationship, it makes it hard to speak into these issues with folks that maybe we don't know, because they're going to be influenced by the millions of dollars that are spent on these ad campaigns.
So, Peter, is there anything else we want to add before we close here on this podcast today?
Yeah, Bob, I would just say, don't give up hope. Believe that the Lord is up to something really powerful. If you would have told me, you know, even 7 years ago that Roe v. Wade would have been overturned, I would have scoffed at the idea and thought that we had, you know, at least 10, 20, 30 more years before we could see the overturning of that particular Supreme Court decision. So I'm disheartened that we lost this particular election, but I know that the Lord is up to something very powerful for us here in the state of Ohio. We just need to be faithful to the daily tasks that God calls us to do and trust God is at work to help us do something very powerful. But if people want to be involved in kind of helping us build that vision moving forward, I invite them to join us at ohiolife.org. Get involved. Every Friday, we come together and we pray at 3 p.m. via Zoom around the state to just pray and ask for the Lord's help. Every month, the first Monday of every month, we get together to talk about what steps we're taking as a pro-life movement, again, via Zoom call. So it doesn't matter where you're at in the state, you can join in these types of activities to pray, to talk, and to seek the Lord's guidance on how we build the culture of life here in the state of Ohio. And it's worth it. When we get home to heaven, the Lord is going to show us how we are able to save lives and how we're able to build this culture, which is beyond just one election. So just continue to trust and hope that God is at work to make right what was made wrong.
So Peter, you mentioned ohiolife.org. I suppose you can find the link to these meetings you're talking about on the website there.
Yep, ohiolife.org. They can contact me personally. I'll make sure people are connected.
All right, great. All right, well, thank you, Peter. Thank you for your witness. Thank you for what you do in life, for all that you will continue to do despite the passage of Issue 1, help give women true help and promote a culture of life in the state of Ohio. And that extra reminder to many of us probably how to move forward, even with intentional discipleship, intentional relationship making, right? That and how we can be leaven in the world and even greatly affect the pro-life movement in that way. So thank you for appearing on the show today, Peter.
Thanks, Bob. It's always good to see you, sir. Keep up the great work.
And I want to thank all of our viewers and listeners for tuning in on this episode of our Being Pro-Life series. Head to the website to view the links talked about in this episode at www.catholicaoc.org/beingprolife. Thanks again for joining us today. I look forward to being with you next time.